Senate Committee on Revenue, Wednesday, March 17, 3 o'clock p.m., Hearing Room A. Public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bills 495, 496, and 497, Tape 66, Side A.
To order the Senate Committee on Revenue, and we will proceed.
This is a subcommittee.
Yes, the subcommittee will have hearings on Senate Bill 495 and 496. I think we can do those all together. And 497, if you want to talk about those when you come up, you can start us off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 495 amends appeals procedures applying to certain late filers and certain non-filers. It allows non-filing taxpayer to submit a return after the taxpayer's period to appeal has expired.
You're on.
What happened to Walt?
The third T.
It authorizes Department of Revenue to refund excess taxes paid or credit the amount against current tax liability. It allows claims for refunds of personal income taxes from the 1995 tax year to be filed within 90 days after the effective date. And it allows taxpayers to file an amended return claiming overpayment of tax at any time after 3 years after the due date of the return.
Are we going to have testimony? What's the list?
Is the list?
Is there a sign-up sheet there, Chris?
Okay. Oh, so we're having a public hearing on all three?
That's what I indicated.
Okay. Public hearing? Okay, well, could we have Senator Fisher come forward and your guests? And let's get an oversight of what you're trying to do. State your name for the record.
Yes, this is Senator Bill Fisher from District 23 from the Roseburg and Point South in Douglas County in the northern part of Josephine and Jackson County. Have with me a gentleman by the name of Ed Collins, who had problems that led to these bills being drawn up, and his accountant, Dean Blumendahl from Canyonville. And because I'm neither a tax accountant nor was I caught in this particular problem, I'm going to go ahead and let them tell you about it and let them talk about the relative merits of the bill. And I want you to know that I do very much support them and have been active in getting these bills drafted and getting hearings on them and so forth, and feel that it's a very necessary thing for our constituents to be able to have this privilege if something comes up unforeseen that messes up their tax filing times and so forth. So I'll let these gentlemen go in the order that they want to go, and I believe probably Mr. Blumendahl will go first.
Honored Chair and Senators, I've prepared for you a case scenario.
Say your name for the
record. My name is Dean Blumendahl, licensed tax consultant. I have prepared for you a case scenario of Mr. Collins' case, which will be presented to you. I'd like to read it to you. Mr. Collins' wife, Nina, became ill early in 1996 and passed away late May of 97. Mr. and Mrs. Collins filed two extensions until October of 1996 for the 1995 tax return that did not file a timely tax return. In January of 1997, the Oregon Department of Revenue sent Mr. Collins a 90-day letter to file a 1995 tax return. Mr. Collins did not respond because of the illness. The Oregon Department of Revenue proceeded to file a return on behalf of Mr. Collins as single with no deductions. The result was a tax assessment due of $247, a penalty assessment due of $123.50, and an interest assessment due of $30.51, for a total assessment of $401.01. The Oregon Department of Revenue then proceeded to garnish Mr. Collins's wages. Upon preparing a correct return with the two exemptions, we found that Mr. Collins actually had a refund coming of $191. We submitted the 1995 tax return for reconsideration and was informed that Mr. Collins has lost his right to file a tax return or to have a correct return on file because of his failure to answer the 90-day letter request to file. We appealed under a new ordinance which was put into effect in October of 1997, I believe. It was OAR 150305.295. And were again denied the refund because we did not meet the 25% of correct tax requirement. We again appealed to the district director, and the penalty of $123.50 was refunded, leaving a balance due Mr. Collins of $468.51. Mr. Collins has been forced to pay the $468.51 to the state of Oregon that he did not owe. I would like to add some other things. First of all, the Internal Revenue Service allows you to file a tax return, an amended return, within 3 years of the filing of the return, whether or not they prepared one for you or not. Oregon does not do that. If you get a 90-day letter in the mail and don't answer it, you cannot file a tax return and have a correct one on file. The Internal Revenue will let you file one from 20 years ago and accept it, if you want to pay the money, right? Or you won't get a refund, but you can get a refund up to 3 years. And what we're proposing here is that this part of the law be brought more in line with the Internal Revenue Code. We tried to appeal this case under, I'll get it here for you in a minute, under a new OAR, 150305.295. And that ordinance has a clause in it under section number 2, which says that the tax, the Department of Assessment exceeds the correct tax by the greater of 25% of the correct tax, or $100. And this relates to the second bill. We were denied the claim under that OAR 305.295 because in the district director's interpretation of the tax code, the word department assessment means tax assessment, not interest assessment, penalty assessment, and so on. So I think that needs to be cleared up. And the second thing is that I would like to state in regards to that, I have two or three clients that pay the good state of Oregon over $10,000 in income tax. And what this OAR is saying is that the state of Oregon can assess them $2,499, and they do not have any right to appeal that assessment because they fall under the 25% of the correct tax or more. Another thing that really does bother me a lot is that the Internal Revenue has adopted a plan now whereby certain lending institutions and other people that want to verify adjusted gross income, the Internal Revenue will verify that for a small fee of $20 per person or whatever. And I'm wondering if the Oregon Department of Revenue is not going to allow somebody to have a correct tax return on file, which is what they've done here with this gentleman. And we go further in technology and stuff as to where maybe the Oregon Department of Revenue is going to get involved in that sort of type of revenue-producing area, that if they have misfiled information on a taxpayer, and then they're confirming that, what that might do in terms of maybe the taxpayer has a child going for some student loans or something, and he gets denied because he does not have a correct tax return on file. And so what this bill, what we're trying to do here is to allow the taxpayer to have a correct tax return on file. At this point, I would like to ask Mr. Collins if the information that I read to you under the case scenario appeared to be correct.
Yes, it does. That seems to just about cover it.
And Mr. Collins, could you state your name for the record,
please? My name is Ed Collins.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, not too much. Dean's pretty well covered it here. The only thing that I have to say is this assessment was done without any checking. They filed it as single, all my tax returns over all the years. I mean, in 30 seconds, all they had to do was look and see, and they would have known this was not right, you know. And this was just done arbitrarily as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are going to let the department answer to this.
So okay. We
thank you for bringing it forward.
Mr. Chair,
would you like to do the
yes,
third
I would like to do a couple of things further here. In checking into this problem, you know, we're quoting OARs here. We're not quoting OISs.
Precisely.
And this really bothers me when our agencies take it out on their constituents in this manner and absolutely refuse to go back and do the right thing when it's very obvious that it's wrong. And again, we're not arguing that maybe a penalty of a certain amount should be applied to this, but they certainly shouldn't be charged huge excess tax charges on those type of things. And so I think the bill, one of the bills does apply for a certain amount of money to take care of their processing and their filing of the report. I guess the bills, as I understand, are not necessarily denying them the right of the report, but at least they would have to then refund the money when it was proven that their facts were wrong. Also, I have a letter that I would like to read very, very short here, Mr. Chair, with your permission. It says, at the last, dear Mr. Blumenthal, at the last executive board meeting of the Oregon Association of Tax Consultants, your bill draft was presented. We voted to support your efforts to have the law changed regarding the matter. There were several examples of similar problems that board members had experienced. You can use our association as endorsement of the proposed bill and wish you the best of luck in your efforts. If you have further needs of the association, feel free to call or write. And then one more letter here of one paragraph to address to me. Dear sir, I teach more than 26 classes in the state of Oregon each year. The participants are income tax professionals. The most often asked question is how to work with the Oregon Department of Revenue. They all seem to have clients who have not responded to the Oregon Department of Revenue within the 90-day period. Since the Department of Revenue will not discuss or reopen any of these tax problems for any known reason, something needs to be done. And that's signed Frank Kennedy, LTC, in support of Bill 495 and 496. I will leave these copies. I'm negligent in the fact that I didn't get them in time to have them copied, but I'll leave them with staff so that you can put them in with the bills. And I would again urge you to consider these bills in a positive manner and do your best to help our constituents who find themselves very often in a very trying circumstance in their personal situation at the same time as they're more or less being hassled by our tax folks, too.
Now, just one question. Are you going to also stick around for SB 497?
I certainly am.
Because this doesn't quite fit into this batch, and so if we could deal
Yes, I certainly am, and I thank you for the opportunity for hearing it, and I would like to thank these gentlemen for coming all the way up from the Canyonville area, which is quite a long trip at a pretty short notice, and working here to help the rest of the folks that are kind of denied their day in court, so to speak, with the Department of Revenue.
Well, we're going to get to have an explanation here, so stick around and let's see what we can find out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee.
I believe we will now have Susan Browning come up and address these problems, which, while probably not too frequent, definitely would be very frustrating having to deal with.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Browning with the Oregon Department of Revenue, and I asked Deborah Buchanan from our personal income tax policy section to join me too, in case you have questions about our process or a little bit about the IRS, too, because I remember Senator Fisher and his guests mentioned that a little bit. We did prepare some testimony for you on both Senate Bill 495 and 496 because they are fairly closely linked, and we have some attachments as well. Two pieces I'd like to talk a little bit about today on Senate Bill 495 and 496 is the current appeal procedure, just a little diagram and description of how it currently works. And then also there are certain administrative issues as you discuss 495 we would like you to just address and help clarify for us so it's clear what you would like us to do as you proceed forward with this. The first attachment you have says income tax appeal procedure. That diagram basically outlines the process for appeal of income tax, and it is statutorily set up. This diagram shows for a taxpayer who files the return and then pays voluntarily. We say they self-assess their tax. They send in their return and say how much they owe and usually include payment with it. And what the department does on that is basically we look at their return, and then we may issue a proposed tax deficiency or refund adjustment because there may be, there's a whole range of things. You may have problems with your addition. You may have exemptions that you claim that we did not see support for or deductions. Most of these are dealing with simply addition errors and those kind of things or similar problems, fairly minor issues. So based on that, the taxpayer can either send in a written appeal and tells us whether they would like to sit down with a person, come in person or over the phone, and sit down and have a conference, or if they would just like to have us consider additional information. And it's usually, by far, just additional information. They will send in additional records or an explanation of how they calculated it or whatever. And then we have staff who will look at that and either sit down in person or over the phone and talk about the issue and then make a determination on that, or else we'll review the written information and make a determination on that. And then there's a letter goes out based on the review of the information or the conference, and then the taxpayer has 90 days to appeal that if they wish. If they still disagree and feel they'd like to have it considered further, they can appeal that to the tax court, the magistrate division. And then the magistrate division will review that, and you can see the little process over here with the, they have a choice. The taxpayer has a choice. They can go to small claims if it's under $5,000, but there's no appeal further if you go to small claims. So that's kind of one of the decisions the taxpayer needs to make at that point. If they to go to magistrate division, the magistrate will consider it and then issue a finding, and there's a 60-day appeal period from that. And then they can petition, if they wish, to the regular full Oregon tax court. And then you see there's an appeal period for that. And then eventually you can actually petition to the Supreme Court for your issue if you feel very, very strongly about it. And we do have a few taxpayers who do because it's usually a major, major issue to them. And I want to point out the different appeal period times here. After the department looks at the return and issues the notice of deficiency or a proposed adjustment, there's a 30-day appeal period where you need to send in your little note saying what you'd like to have done. You don't need to send your information in that time. Just let us know what you'd like to do, that you have a concern. A lot of times we just get a little note saying, I don't agree with you. And at that point we'll contact them and ask them, do they want to come in and talk about it? Do they want to have a phone call and talk about it? or they just like to send in some more information for us to look at. And then there's the 90-day appeal period. So that's the process that's followed for taxpayers who voluntarily send in their return and assess their own tax, make a determination on what they think they owe, which is the primary number of people. Then the other little chart that shows, that's attached, says non-filer tax appeal procedure. And this is for those individuals who do not file their returns. We do have non-filers in the state that we work we attempt to reach resolution with them because one of our main goals in the tax system is voluntary compliance. And the individuals who aren't filing, sometimes they don't understand. Sometimes they have events in their life that make it difficult for them to file. And we need to work with them and, if possible, get it resolved so they can get back in the system and filing and paying. So what we do on those is that since we don't have information directly from the taxpayer, they haven't sent in the return, they haven't said how much they think they owe, we go back through the records that we have available and attempt to set up a tax based on our best information that we can come up with. And we do assess that as a single taxpayer filing separately.
That's automatic?
Mm-hmm.
And why do we do it that way if there's a repeated pattern that perhaps it was joint?
Senator, members of the committee, I'm Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. The married filing joint is actually an election that must be made by both taxpayers when they file the return.
Okay, but let's get into this case, which we'll deal with throughout. But okay, so we have a situation where someone hasn't filed, and so because we do have it as an election, you deal with it on an individual basis. However, because of the way rules are written, the ability to go back and reassess the situation has been lost because they have not complied with the 90-day restriction. In fact, you have almost penalized them in a sense because of that, because they cannot go back and get and recreate a joint situation, because they've missed that window of opportunity, and therefore they suddenly have become single, which strikes me as kind of a flaw in the ability to assess what's really happening. I mean, we're giving them some opportunity, but not a complete opportunity.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is the abilities we walk through here, and I think Senator Fisher talked a little bit about it with doubtful liability, which is something that the department asked your approval for last session, and we actually have another bill in House Bill 2132 to expand the ability to review taxpayers' information, because we totally agree. Our intent when we deal with tax non-filers is to get them into the system and not make it so punitive or so difficult that it's hard for them to file and to pay. It's in everyone's best interest to get everybody back in the system and working with everyone. So we have, and we'll talk a little bit about that as we talk about doubtful liability, and you see that provision and how that works too. So basically, we send out a notice of determination of tax and an assessment. So we attempt to set up how much tax we believe the taxpayer owes. And then the taxpayer, you can see that on the chart, the taxpayer has 90 days to appeal that to the magistrate division, the Oregon Tax Court. Okay. And then at that point, this is a little bit different process than we looked at on the other chart, because the department at that point is not involved. The magistrate division will look at the return and make a decision about whether or not they have jurisdiction over this account or not. And jurisdiction includes things like timeliness of appeal and the type of issue that the taxpayer wants to address. So if they do have jurisdiction, it follows the same kind of course we talked about before, where you're a self-assessed voluntary taxpayer. You go through and you would have a magistrate hear your case and talk about it and make a decision as well. And then you can appeal it to the tax court, and then you could appeal it to the Supreme Court. So that's the same for both non-filers and voluntary filers, that process through the court system. So stepping aside and looking at if the court doesn't have jurisdiction, they look at it and decide that they do not have jurisdiction, then they will dismiss the case, but then the magistrates also point out oftentimes to the person that they could come back to the Department of Revenue and ask for relief under doubtful liability, what we call doubtful liability. That's the term we've used. And we have a little discussion about what doubtful liability is on here, but we, as Senator Fisher mentioned, the department sought this change in 1997 because we did want to help non-filers who were coming forward with their tax return and showing how much tax they really owed. Well, at that point, previously, before we got this cancellation of doubtful liability provision, we had to accept what the department had assessed. Even if we look at the taxpayer's return and say, by golly, you're right, you know, based on the reports and the information you're providing, you really own only this much tax. And we did have some really extreme examples of where the taxpayer, we assessed based on the information we had, but unbeknownst to us, the person had gone through some real major life issues, and the tax that they owed was very, very truly owed, that they could demonstrate that they really owed, was very different than what we assessed, because we didn't have access to the information to know the things that they only they knew. So we were basically in a position where we were trying to collect a tax even though we didn't believe it was correct. So we brought forward this legislation that you approved to give us the ability to take a second look at it once the taxpayer brought forward their returns and to look at it and see whether we would support what the taxpayer's claiming or not. Unfortunately, with non-filers, a lot of times we do not get the person's attention until we do start garnishing their wages or their bank account. Sometimes people are putting it off and hoping it'll go away, and maybe if I don't hear anything, it's gone away. Other times it is because people are going through real traumatic times in their lives, whether it's a death or divorce or bankruptcy or something like that, where this is just not a high enough priority for them at that time. But when we start garnishing their wages or their checking or banking account, they realize that it's important that they need to at least contact the department and try to make some kind of a resolution on this. I did want to point out, too, no matter what the process, at any stage we can work on a settlement offer or a payment plan. So we do work that through with the persons as well. A lot of times they will come forward once we garnish and we'll say, okay, we'd be fine. We'll release the garnishment. How about you pay $50 a month till we can get this resolved or something? Or maybe we can settle it based on some other provisions. So there are some capabilities as we go through there. So we're very, very pleased with the tool we got as part of the cancellation of doubtful liability. When we portrayed it to you last session, we were talking about using it for extraordinary and unusual cases. Those cases where the taxpayer did have the opportunity to file, they got lots of notices, they had the appeal period, but they, for whatever reason, they didn't file and they didn't come forward with the information. So the department assessed it, but once we, and then usually garnished, but once the taxpayer realized the enormity of it, they came forward and we saw that it really was, there was a big difference. We wanted a mechanism to help resolve that. So we asked for, because this was new to us, we asked for the ability to set the criteria by rule with the intent that was for extraordinary and unusual cases. And that, we have attached to that, we have a copy of the rule in the last page here, too, that shows, as Senator Fisher says, it's where the department assessment exceeds correct tax by the greater of 25% of the correct tax or $100. And as you can see on this last page here, too, we talk about the procedures intended for extraordinary and unusual cases where the assessment set up by the department is considered to be excessive in comparison to the taxpayer's true tax liability. So that's what Senate Bill 496 is referencing, and it would actually change this process by placing the $100 criteria in statute, and as we read it, eliminating the 25% criteria. So I believe that's how that works. But it has been a very effective tool, and as I mentioned, the department is very concerned about how we can better help non-filers, and our House Bill 2132 that we've introduced this session allows non-filers to file a return after their appeal period has expired, and there's no limit, so that they can come forward with what we call a true return at any time, because we think that would be really helpful, and it would remove a lot of the burden of people going through doubtful liability, because if they can bring it forward, we agree with it, we can work to get payment of that tax, and that would be great, and then we can get them back and as a taxpaying citizen with everyone else. That's important. The tax court also has a bill, House Bill 2300, which they're trying to help with taxpayers too, and that would permit refund claims to be filed within 2 years of payment of the tax. Unfortunately, with non-filers, a lot of times we don't have payment of the tax or filing, so, but that would help some people, I think, that who might be in the system trying to work their way through. So that's a little explanation of how the process works currently. And
if we could get to this case now, because sure. This I find of interest in that the district director could eliminate the penalty of $123.50 and yet not deal with the actual tax situation or with the interest, because 305.295 more or less starts out with Department of Revenue may in its discretion cancel any tax penalty or interest or any portion thereof